Good morning. Welcome to Bank Chat. I'm Hugh Chiverton, your co-host today, Anna Fenton. Anna, good morning to you.
Good morning, everybody.
China's ambassador to London has denied accusations by a former employee of the British consulate here that he was detained and tortured by mainland police seeking information about anti-government protests in Hong Kong. And US lawmakers have overwhelmingly now approved legislation that's intended to support human rights and democracy in Hong Kong and backs the territory's protesters, sending the measure opposed by Beijing now to President Donald Trump. What does all this mean then in Beijing, in Washington and here in Hong Kong? Let us know your thoughts. You can leave a message on our Facebook page, which is Bank Chat on RTHK Radio 3, or preferred option, give us a call. Our telephone number is 233-88266, 233-88266, or you can email us, bankchat@rthk.hk, and we'll read out your messages, although we may have to edit for length. Joining us and the discussion this morning, we have with us Mark Michelson, Chairman Asia CEO Forum of IMA Asia, David Webb, a shareholder activist, and Mark Simon, who's a columnist with Next Media. A couple of emails to kick off related to various issues. First of all, Andrew Kay says, what on the subject of parents, what pathetic TV footage of parents trying to get their children out of PolyU? Where have they been for 5 months? Poor excuse for parents. They should be removed from the gene pool. That comes from Andrew Kay. And Alison. Alison, I think I'm going to have to put a word alleged in the middle of this. Okay, but Alison says, dear Backchat, the SCMP reports that a record number of 213 defendants charged in connection with the PolyU saga were brought to six courts yesterday, with magistrates sitting from 9.30 until evening. The 213 among the 1,100 arrested at PolyU were mostly charged with rioting offences, which carry a maximum penalty of 10 years imprisonment. However, according to the press, all 213 were released on bail on condition that they agree to a travel ban and would not set foot in the area around PolyU. Alison says, we're talking about alleged criminals who basically attempted to murder members of the police force with petrol bombs and arrows. Do the judges who impose such lax bail conditions really think that they will deter these hardcore radicals from going back to the streets to create more chaos? If so, they are seriously mistaken. I suspect most will be recommitting the same offences within a few days of being granted bail. The CE and police chief have repeatedly stated that their first priority is to restore peace to the streets of Hong Kong. That can only be achieved if the legal process is fast-tracked, so the thousands who have been arrested can be quickly brought to trial and jailed if they are found guilty. That comes from Alison. Once again, if you want to chip in, you want to air your thoughts, drop us a line, bankchat@rthk.hk, or call us on 233-88266. Mark Michelson, maybe we'll start with you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us today. So let's look at what's happened just in Washington with the Senate House overwhelmingly, almost pretty much unanimously supporting that Hong Kong Act. And it's now going to Donald Trump. I guess the question is, what's he going to do with it?
Well, you know, it's very much a part of the U.S.-China trade negotiations. And it looked like it wasn't moving in part because he was trying to maneuver a little bit, he and his people. But now there are reports he's going to sign it. I obviously don't know. I think politically within the U.S., there's quite a lot of pressure. There were 50 senators that were sponsors of the bill. That's a little.
Everyone was piling on, weren't
they?
That's a little
unusual, including the majority leader of the Senate, Mitch McConnell, who you know, originally was the author, or his staff was the author of the Hong Kong Policy Act. So I think my guess is the pressure will be pretty strong.
I guess the argument would be that once he signs it, he's lost that chip, so it's better to keep it in reserve.
That's right, but you know, a lot of this has to do with domestic politics, as it does from this end as well. So you know, I can't know for sure. I think, especially sitting this far away, and I think even people in the United States don't know for sure, but I suspect he'll sign it. Mm.
Mark Simon, economist with Next Media. Good morning to you. Thanks for joining us. What do you think he's likely to do?
I think he'll probably sign it. There's no downs. There's no upside, and you got a certain certain veto override. So why do it? You know. Secondly, he actually does gain more leverage when he signs it, because the fact of the matter is you've got to implement it, and that's always going to be the issue. You know, in other words, how does the report come out? Who writes the report? Well, of course, it's the State Department. How does the consulate, you know, handle this? what becomes an infringement, what becomes not an infringement. You know, there's going to be a massive education effort probably on the part of most people in Hong Kong to learn what's actually in the bill. You know, in other words, I get a lot of questions from people, and, you know, they think we're going to be dragging the police spokesman over in the Magnitsky Act or something like that. I think, to me, the whole thing that really, you know, being back in D.C., having, you know, seen the Senator McConnell and met with other people when we were there twice or three times, actually, what amazed me is the loss of clout China has on Capitol Hill. It's just they're just looking at you. I mean, the one senator who really epitomizes this is Marsha Blackburn. And, you know, she's from Tennessee. She's what we call a FedEx senator, you know, the home of FedEx. And I happen to know that basically she was given, you know, FedEx said, well, you do what you have to do, you know. And there was no pressure when she told them, because she was so personally appalled by what was going on here. She said, what do you need to have done here? And, you know, basically she took a leading position on this. Now, I don't think that would have happened 6 years ago, to be honest with you. In other words, I think FedEx would have stood up. But I think U.S. business has reached a point in China and other people that it's just fascinating to me to see how Hong Kong is kind of maneuvering around this. The other thing I would add, and I'll say this, is that the Hong Kong government largely has itself to blame for this coming. When we were back there in early October, we sat across the table, a few of us, from Majority Leader, and Mitch McConnell told us he's not going to be able to get it done this year. The schedule's too packed. He's going to have to do this through an operations bill. And through the government continually finding ways to upset people in Hong Kong and drive people out onto the streets, they raised the stakes high enough where basically Rubio, Hawley, Scott, and a few other senators, including Ted Cruz and Dick Durbin on the Democratic side, and, you know, could make this an issue. And so to me it was remarkable. I did not think that it would be passing in the form it did, really until early spring.
You don't think that's because of the progress or lack of progress of the trade negotiations, and that?
No, Mnuchin was playing around with this. Secretary Mnuchin, there was, you know, wasn't rumors. We didn't know after talking to people. I know the administration, no administration is happy about a bill like this. In other words, you go across to Washington, D.C., nobody likes basically, you know, leashes being put on them about how they conduct a policy. But what amazed me is the Trump administration early on, even in talking with certain people there, you know, had really, you know, not much of a view on it. I don't think they were in favor of it, but you didn't see them getting in the way of it. And the other thing, too, is let's remember who was in senior people in the administration. You know, you have in London, you have this Hong Kong alumni that's really quite something. And, you know, sorry about that. And, you know, then you have these other people who are in, you have the alumni. And then in D.C., you have the same thing. You've got Mary Kissel, who's with the Wall Street Journal. She's a senior advisor to Pompeo. Matt Pottinger is one of the top national security advisors people. Matt was here for years with the Wall Street Journal. And you can go throughout and find these people. And so there's no lack of knowledge about Hong Kong in the Trump administration.
David Webb, good morning to you.
Morning.
And thanks for joining us. What's your take on this? Perhaps you're less interested in the internal or the domestic politics of the U.S. But if Trump does sign it, what do you think the consequences will be?
Well, immediate consequences should be nothing, because if you read the draft of the act, which I did yesterday several times before, but it provides for a sanctions regime if conditions are not met, if the higher degree of autonomy is not upheld, if the promises in the Joint Declaration and the Basic Law are not upheld. And this all began, of course, with, in 1992, the U.S. granting Hong Kong special treatment, special separate recognition of its customs territory, aviation agreements, shipping, and so on. Clearly, if it can't be interference in foreign affairs, if you grant an area special treatment, basically at the request of the incoming sovereign, and then modify that treatment later to attach conditions for upholding the original promises. So I think it's a good thing. It is, of course, open to becoming a political tool in some other battle, some broader geopolitical conflict between the US and China. But it establishes sensible propositions that officials involved in removing Hong Kong's autonomy or heavily downgrading it should face sanctions and personal sanctions. You know, freezing their US assets and bank accounts, for example, is an option, so that they would think twice about breaching these promises. And it's rather a shame that the UK, which of course is the only other signatory to the Joint Declaration, doesn't have such legislation and only has six monthly reports to the Parliament on the status of Hong Kong, but doesn't really do much about it.
Okay, but like things like measures like freezing the assets of officials who carry out policy you don't agree with. Imagine if China did that to the US, it'd be outcry.
Not really, because I don't think many American officials have assets in China. There are some. Mitch McConnell's wife's family, for example, Elaine Chao, has a shipping business.
It's a very unusual kind of measure. It's a kind of ultra-virus measure, freezing the assets of officials.
Well, that's among the range of possibilities.
Being on civil servants, effectively.
But at least it allows for selective sanctions rather than a broad sanction that would hurt all Hong Kongers, which would be withdrawing the status of Hong Kong under US law. And that would impact our economy severely. So before they go to that nuclear option, there are smaller things they can do. And all of it should establish some framework of deterrent to breaking your promises.
I'm afraid of collateral damage. I don't have the confidence that it will be applied without strong political influence and so on. And I'm afraid that what we're going to have is what happened during the 90s with most favored nation status. Every year because it's supposed to be looked at every year. Every year we would have to deal with it. Now there may be some serious issues, and those should be addressed. But this is open for abuse.
The existing act allows the president of the United States since 1992 to state that he believes the high degree of autonomy is gone. And then to withdraw various sections of U.S. law applicable to Hong Kong. So they already have the provisions
I'm aware of that. I was involved in together.
Have they abused it in the 27 years since then?
This is much more focused now. It's much more political. And we're in a situation, as Mark pointed out, where not only China, but I wonder if Hong Kong has many friends, real friends in Washington these days.
Maybe Mark can comment on that. Hong Kong has all kinds of friends. I know, but
they look at it in a different way. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, Mark, I think you're hitting on the key point here. I'm not trying to hijack this, but this really all has to do with how the world is viewing China now.
That's right.
This is everything about. I mean, Mark, I went back to Washington D.C. a couple of times years ago. You know, on MFN trips and things like that. You know. And I myself worry that sometimes we're a little bit too simplistic with China, but I think we're in a stage now where China's going to have to understand that, you know, they're not going to be able to rely on every U.S. Lobby group and business group to push them through. In other words, they're not going to be able to say, oh, shucks, well, we didn't mean to steal all that technology. And oh, golly gee, we didn't know you're supposed to not do all these evil things. And I think that's over in my mind. I think those days are over. I myself am actually worried. My biggest worry about this act is that, frankly, as we're already seeing people sending emails saying, all right, now let's ban Carrie Lam. Let's take all her money. Let's do all these things. There's a process that's going to happen. And I think this is where Hong Kong, especially some of our younger activists, I must say, have basically a belief that somehow they get to call up U.S. senators and tell them what to do. It's kind of amusing sometimes when you're there. But for China, I think, quite frankly, this is just a bigger issue. And, you know, actually the EU, when you talk to some people from their foreign office, they know it's changing as well. I mean, it's a changing it's a changing dynamic with China. They're no longer, it's no longer the happy development of China.
But if there is a sufficient crackdown on Hong Kong for the, to cause the State Department to report negatively under the this framework, then the damage will be self-inflicted by China. It will already have caused quite heavy economic damage by restricting civil liberties in Hong Kong anyway. So, you know, it's a consequence to their own actions if this happens.
Won't this just annoy China more? It's yet another foreign attempt to interfere, as they see it.
That's what they'll say. And but then, you know, so was in that case, so was the original U.S. The Hong Kong Policy Act, which granted special treatment to a place in China. I mean, you can't really have it both ways. You either want special treatment or you don't. And if you want special treatment, then the party providing that special treatment is entitled to expect the conditions to be upheld, especially since they're not asking for anything new. Yeah, they're simply asking that the promises in the Joint Declaration and the high degree of autonomy be maintained. That's all that it really says in the Act.
You've also got the situation in London we referred to in the introduction. The British Foreign Secretary has said that he summoned the Chinese ambassador to express outrage at the brutal and disgraceful treatment of Simon Cheng, the employee of the British consulate here in Hong Kong, in violation of China's international obligations. I've made clear we expect the Chinese authorities to investigate and hold those responsible to account. That's from the British Foreign Secretary. Mark Simon, what do you make of that that affair? Or do you think it's going to go anywhere? Do you think it'll lead to anything?
No.
It was a lot. It was a rather hilarious response from Theresa Cheng last night.
Yes.
Where she said, if you've been beaten up by the police, report it to the police.
In China,
yes. You know, laughs all round. I mean, this is the day on which she's also, her department has also written to the court saying, although that the emergency regulations ordinance has been ruled unconstitutional, and although the face mask regulations made under that ordinance have also been ruled unconstitutional, please can we keep them going until the Court of Final Appeal says otherwise?
But David, she's been grievously bodily harmed, so she might not be, you know, in great shape just now to make these kind of pronouncements.
I don't think her brain is in her wrist, which she unfortunately broke. And obviously we hope she gets well soon and comes back soon, because she's got rather a lot going on here.
It was an odd time to leave town, wasn't it?
In order to promote Hong Kong as a dispute resolution centre.
Yeah, you couldn't make that up.
anyway, back to...
We're very good at that, aren't we?
Back to Simon Cheng, you were going to say?
I don't think it's going to be a huge issue for a lot of reasons. First of all, I think, quite frankly, the Brits aren't going to push it. There's really only one group that can make it a big issue. I mean, people can write about it, people can do things about it. In terms of like a protest or something like that, but I don't see it being a big issue unless somebody in the UK political system decides to make it a big issue. And I haven't seen anybody really stepping up for that.
What do we think he was really doing?
I think he was standing on a platform in GST and they grabbed him because that's what they do. One of the things about this is everybody knows who's on this radio call knows that, like, sometimes I'm the black hand on a regular basis. The paranoia that they have is just phenomenal. They cannot come to grips, the mainland cannot come to grips with the fact that Hong Kong people actually have the ability to rise up and do these things. There's always got to be a black hand. And I think Simon was just basically... You know, he was unfortunately just the victim of that paranoia. In other words, you know, here's a guy who knows, maybe he had lunch, maybe he was pro-democracy, which would probably not surprise anybody.
He did say he was. No, he said he was.
He said he was.
Yeah.
But Mark, he's a trade officer. That's normally code spy, right? So, you know, all the time.
You could say that, but he's also a Hong Kong guy. But the point is, look, if he really was a spy, if they really thought he was, I don't think they'd pick him up. Because, you know, that they really thought that of you, they'd probably be worried that then there would have to be a response from the Brits. Protocol would dictate that. There'd have to be some counteraction. I think basically they think they have this guy and they probably thought that he knew people and they were going to sweat him. But it's the paranoia. It's this absolute paranoia. You know, I've seen this every year since 2003, where it's like, who is the black hand behind? What? You mean somebody had to go pay people to, like, walk out the building and get in a line and wear a white shirt that day? And, you know, some, there's a secret factory somewhere run by the CIA turning out black shirts. And, you know, I mean, you know, basically people are bringing beer bottles down to the protesters. I'm sorry. I think the real thing here is it shows the paranoia of this regime. And, you know, this poor young man basically sounds like he had a pretty bad time because of it.
It does show that the West Kowloon border with China, or boundary if you prefer, is fulfilling its function, because his account includes having made it to the boundary in West Kowloon before he was turned around and sent back to Shenzhen for interrogation. That reminds me that that Beijing seems to like Hong Kong courts ruling on constitutionality on Hong Kong laws when it goes in its favor, as the court did on the West Kowloon ordinance for the co-location. It's only when the courts rule against them that they say that Hong Kong courts simply can't rule on constitutionality, as they did yesterday over the face mask rule.
Well, yeah, and it's hard to know, and Mark may be right about this incident sort of fading a little bit, but it could add fuel to the fire a little bit. But I think more important is what David just said, is the constitutional issue. I'm not a lawyer. I don't know what the rights and wrongs are, but it does suggest that there's intervention. And in the list of many areas that the new act, the new Hong Kong Human Rights Act and Freedom Act has in it, it is rule of law and any threats to the rule of law. And I think this might be one of those things that might be regarded as that.
Well, do we not think it was irresponsible of the British consulate to allow somebody to go to China under this guise, possibly in breach of their visa?
No, I think he had been attending a trade conference initially. That was my understanding. So it's part of his job.
Was stupidity then going to a prostitute in China?
Allegedly.
Well, no, he hasn't denied that.
He hasn't confirmed it either.
But I don't know
for a fact that that's illegal.
But we don't also know that this alleged torture took place. Bear in mind that as a result of that, he now gets to claim asylum and gets speeded up immigration. You know, this is not without a benefit to this young man.
I think he'd get that. I mean, I think there'd be little doubt that he would have trouble getting, you know, anything if he just even minimized the story. He could probably just agree to stay quiet and they'd take care of it.
Folks, there's things don't add up here. Why did he ask the consulate to keep quiet about it and not make a fuss? And then he blabs to the BBC.
Well, because he was inside there for a while.
Look, so. Put it this way, Anna. He was debriefed. So he went to the UK consulate as their employee and was debriefed for some period of time. He apparently now is outside of Hong Kong when he's made this statement yesterday. And the Foreign Secretary, Dominic Raab, in the UK, has seen fit to come out in the strongest terms against what China allegedly did to him. Clearly, the Foreign Ministry believes what he says about this. Otherwise, they would have just kept much more quiet about it or said, well, there are, you know, or cast doubt on his account of what happened.
But why is it taking months? They believe him.
I'm willing to believe him.
This all happened in August. Incidentally, folks, the same 5 days. The Cathay Pacific boss has changed, the HSBC boss changed, and the Big Four got their wrists slapped, and this guy got lifted. This is all in August.
Why? And what's your point?
Well, now November, why is it all suddenly coming out now?
Well, maybe he wanted to negotiate his resettlement and get out of Hong Kong for fear of being grabbed again. It may not be a reasonable fear, but it's genuine on his part. That he wanted to get himself and his fiancée out of Hong Kong before he went public on this. That would be my guess.
Okay.
It's not like he's waiting years to surface an allegation like this. I think it's probably the earliest time he could have done it. Okay. But you have to ask him that. Try and get him on your show and ask him.
He said he won't do any more. He said he made a long statement, and he said that's the end of it. And he did the BBC interview, and he said he wasn't.
And the Wall Street Journal interview.
Did he do an interview for Wall Street Journal as well?
Yeah.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
I didn't know that. All right. Okay. All right. Well, thanks for your comment. We're just going to break now for a few minutes for the news at 9 o'clock. If you want to contribute, give us a call. 233-88-266 is our number. We've got some emails, thoughts to share after the news. Before that, the weather is going to be fine and dry today with temperatures up to about 25 degrees. And the readings at the moment, 21 Celsius, and the relative humidities now at 70%. Welcome back. Bank Chat on a Thursday morning with Anna Fenton and me, Hugh Chiverton, continuing to talk about, I guess, international aspects of the protests in Hong Kong, but also a number of other issues. We have with us Mark Simon, columnist with Next Media, joining us on the line from Washington, D.C., I think. David Webb, who's a shareholder activist, and Mark Michelson, Chairman Asia CEO Forum at IMA Asia. Please join us by calling on 233-88-266 if there's something you want to say. Or you can email backchat at rthk.hk, or you can go to our Facebook page and comment there. That's Backchat on RTHK Radio 3. And on the Facebook page, TC says, the Hong Kong Human Rights and Democracy Act is a piece of legislation about the United States' relationship with Hong Kong if some conditions aren't met. It's perfectly within the sovereignty of the US to deny someone from entering its territory. So why are the Chinese and Hong Kong government interfering with American internal affairs? Says TC. And Yan says, I understand that under the Magnitsky Act, some 69 Russian officials had their US assets frozen and were denied US visas for their families. Under the Freedom and Democracy Act, does this mean Xi Jinping's daughter will no longer be able to study at Harvard and Carrie Lam denied entry into the US? Or the cynical of me believes all these senior, highly paid, selfish leaders will still take all and get away with free entry into the USA? That's from Yan. Okay, some other emails. Maybe we'll get to that in just a moment. Drake says, some listener wrote about fast-tracking our legal procedures. Well, today marks the fourth month. I'm going to put another alleged in here, by the way. Okay. Today marks the fourth month since the 100-odd alleged gangsters launched a horrific attack on civilians. How many of them were brought before the court? Six. How can our fair and robust court do anything about it? Nothing. Ignorant people would never see the systematic injustice in our society. That comes from Drake. Bowen says, judging from Matthew Chung's using five adjectives yesterday to describe the kind of district council elections the government wanted to see this Sunday, prospects don't look particularly good. What gave the game away was his use of the word impartial. Is any election anywhere impartial? Or are district council elections in Hong Kong impartial because the DAB and the FTU have always won most of the seats? The pro-establishment parties have always been given a lot more financial resources and government support than the PAN Dems. So were past district council elections fair, or did most of the seats being won by the pro-establishment parties make them fair? Most crucial of all was the chief secretary saying, quote, but much depends on the cooperation of violent protesters. If they start vandalizing, start violence, start arson in many places, blocking the roads, shipping traffic, then this will really ruin the election, unquote. Bowen says it's unimaginable that protesters will start arson in many places and block the roads on the 24th because those actions will be against their own core interests. But that is not to say these and other things won't be done by others, or the police and others won't cause trouble and provoke scuffles by, for example, stopping and causing delays for ordinary voters to vote in constituencies where it's felt that pro-establishment parties will lose. In the present circumstances, the presence on the election day of an adequate number of independent observers, including from the IPCC, will be of critical importance. That comes from Bowen. Thank you very much indeed. And Matthew quotes, this is an earlier email from Andrew Kay, the parents of the children in PolyU should be removed from the gene pool, unquote. Matthew says, really, mate? I think that's called genocide. Hugh, I don't support censorship of listeners' emails and think that hearing the views of everyone unfiltered is the magic of Backchat. I also think giving people like Andrew Kay free rein to say things like this does his pro-authoritarian cause more harm than good. However, I do wonder if comments like this really are a bit too much. That comes from Matthew.
It's also medically wrong, scientifically wrong. If they've already got 18-year-old children or so, it's unlikely they're going to be using their genes to produce any more children. They've already done it. So what's the point of removing the parents from the gene pool anyway? It's kind of too late.
I think that's a moot point.
Okay. I think also, Matthew, I mean, I did kind of blink at that, but I don't think the being removed from the gene pool necessarily means genocide. I think it just means not having children.
Sterilization?
Whatever.
Let's not go there.
Yeah, but I don't think it necessarily implies violence or genocide, Matthew. Anyway, that was my take. It may be, as you say, that when people say things like that, they cause more harm than good. Okay, and Michael Cigani is listening, and he says, it's not ridiculous for the US to impose sanctions on selected officials. It's mild compared to China imposing virtual sanctions on entire countries. For example, South Korea for allowing missile defense. Taiwan, Japan, etc., by forbidding tourism there, and of course the NBA, Delta, Cathay, etc. All that is far worse, says Michael Cigani. Thanks very much indeed for that. Mark Simon, there's some other emails we'll get to in just a moment. Mark Simon, is there something in that? I mean, is this, when China, is very critical of NBA or whoever, do you get that kind of pushback in America? Is that why it's got this bipartisan support?
I think the NBA actually was kind of a bellwether point for U.S. relationships. I don't think the Chinese had any idea the firecracker they lit with that. They thought they could just normally bully people, and then all of a sudden it wasn't that way. It's an amazing thing to watch in the last 4 years, or really 5 years, the Chinese really thinking they can just push any group around at any time, in any place. And I think the thing that really hurt them in the last coming up to this Hong Kong debate was, I think the NBA had something to do with it. In other words, we're not going to let these guys come into our system. And make the adjustments, as one of your callers early pointed out. And I think the other thing, too, was essentially China is becoming seen more and more as not a benign partner for trade, but as something beyond a strategic competitor.
Mark, a lot of people will say China's just doing now. It's just muscling in on America's game, basically. America's been bullying the rest of the world in exactly this way.
The whole thing is, I'd be completely...
It's just a power struggle. It's a straight-up power struggle between the two.
You know what? I am completely sympathetic to that, and then I just would make this argument. Basically, Americans were a pain in the butt. We drive everybody crazy. We'll do everything wrong and hopefully get the right thing at the end. Sometimes you don't, but there's a chance for a conversation with us. I haven't noted, or there'll always be a conversation with us. I have not noted this current regime in China being willing to have a conversation with anybody.
But that's what's going
on.
We could say that about Hong Kong too, Mark. I mean...
What?
Not much discussions going on, is
there? Right, well, it takes two, doesn't it? There's plenty of civil organizations trying to organize dialogues, but it's with each other. It's with themselves and not with the government, because the government doesn't attend. There was one last Saturday.
That's right.
That various people organized, and nobody from the government showed up. At least we don't know that they did, unless they were hiding in the audience and listening and so on.
I think they did. I think I was told they did.
Who was that then?
But not officially. I was told by one of the people who was there that...
So on the day off, Saturday, they can...
Yeah.
Yes.
Could have been.
Well, in a personal capacity. Civil servants attend marches in their personal capacity. They're allowed to do that.
Okay, a couple more...
Anna, I would have one thing to say here with that. There is a split in the U.S. There's the engagement community. There's the hawk community. I'm probably by a long shot in the hawk community. But the engagement community has been pushed to the point where it's like, what else do you want us to do, China? I was back. We see people who are the Council of Foreign Relations types, I call them. These are the basically foreign policy elite, and they're pulling their hair out because every time they ask China about something or tell China something, now it's basically not interested in listening to it anymore. And China has basically decided under Xi Jinping that they're just going to do things differently now. And I think that's a real, that's the issue.
It's
like Hong Kong.
It's their way or the highway?
That's the way they're treated.
But I don't think all officials in China have decided that. And when you talk to them individually, and you're right, that's the trend. But it gives you hope for the future that it's still valuable to engage to some extent, realizing what you just said, Mark, that the chances of being successful have diminished. But at the same time, if you don't do that, you're left in, I think, a worse place in the end.
Well, you're saying not all officials are Xi Jinping, but he's the one that counts.
Yeah.
So, you know, and you've got this consequent intransigence of the Hong Kong government, despite having appointed an independent expert panel to its IPCC, and that panel then producing a statement that wasn't meant to be published, which says that basically you're powerless or inadequately powered and under-resourced, and you're not going to be able to do an effective job. And they've just sort of dismissed that and carried on.
No pun intended.
Keep calm or sea lamb and carry on. And they're not giving any ground on the possibility of local democratization. And, you know, it's really simple. You just abolish corporate voting in the functional constituencies and the election committee, and you produce something that looks very much like a democratic system. Because
the
then
administration
you have,
has left no stone unturned.
Well, it won't turn that stone. That's Matthew Cheung's buzz phrase at the moment. No stone unturned, addressing deep-rooted social conflicts and all of this stuff, rather than addressing the real issue, which is lack of accountability.
You have to move in the direction of political reform. And, you know, as David said, there are steps to do that.
Yeah. They think that they can somehow tweak the dials and levers of policy on whether it's housing or social welfare or healthcare or something, and that will make everyone happy without being accountable to the people for those policies. And that's not going to be a solution any longer. They've tried that for 22 years, but it's unstable.
Okay, here's an email from Andrew and Mark Simon. You might want to respond to this. Going over some of the ground we've mentioned, putting it more colourfully, I guess. Andrew says, with the subject line, Kill Bill.
Is it the same Andrew?
This is... as what? Not as Andrew Kay. No, this is Andrew, another Andrew. Okay. Who says, if a bill is tabled in the US with the word democracy or patriot in the title, you can take it to the bank. It's about something else entirely. Hong Kong, which I seriously doubt Agent Orange could even find on a map, is just a minor pawn in his ongoing China trade war. Once he gets what he wants in that regard, he'll drop us faster than a Ukrainian bikini model who's hit 22. Cruz, Rubio et al. Are similarly disingenuous and have repeatedly demonstrated stupefying ignorance about Hong Kong and the current situation. Hong Kong has had these troubles now for over 5 months, and so far we've had one death, allegedly at the hands of the police, and one at the hands of the protesters. The troubles in LA that stemmed from their police beating an unarmed black man half to death led not only to the governor bringing in the National Guard, but also President Bush deploying the 7th Infantry Division, and the 1st Marine Division, which resulted in 63 deaths, 2,383 injured, and 12,000 arrests. And that was in 6 days. In Hong Kong, over 5 months, we've had a couple of dozen PLA in civvies clear some bricks. But yeah, we're the ones abusing government power and behaving in an authoritarian manner. That comes from Andrew. Mark, do you want to respond?
Well, yeah, I do. I think that's silly. First of all, I would be happy to put Andrew's view of the world up against my view of the world with the ballot box, and I don't think he can defend it. I mean, basically, let's go back to all these worlds. The United States is not a perfect place. We don't make that argument, but it is democracy where people get to work things out and talk things out and eventually take action. What we've had here is a delusionally position that basically somehow people don't matter, and that's the problem with Andrew. There's an inherent delusion with Andrew's position. I mean, he's actually, it's not a very good position in terms of being thought out, because essentially he's coming from the premise that somehow he matters in the world of Xi Jinping and matters in the world of the Communist Party, and that answer is no, he doesn't matter. And I that's why I'm very, you know, take this hard line that I take. I think I know, we know what these guys have told us time and time again. We don't really matter to them. Fall in line, do what you're told to do, and then maybe you'll be lucky and we won't kill you. Maybe you'll be lucky and we won't ruin your life. Now, as far as the trade war thing, the initial thing that you talked about, actually, I think there is something to the fact that it's become part of a larger debate, but I don't think that's become part of the larger debate on the part of the U.S. In other words, I think China has essentially failed in their belief, and I get this from just watching them. They failed in their actions and their beliefs in thinking that they could turn Hong Kong into a leverage point with Trump. And basically, the U.S. Congress took that away from them. Do I think Trump would have used Hong Kong as a leverage? I think that's highly probable. But he doesn't have the chance and hasn't had the chance. And that's why I said earlier, now that it's been passed and through the Congress, it's actually inside the administration. He would have more chance now to use it as leverage than before. In other words, he could basically have his appointees and his people determine what violations took place and then argue it out with the Congress in long Byzantine hearings. But before this time, no, actually, it really wasn't a piece of leverage for him.
Okay. Some more thoughts. Mr. Pink says, breaking news, Beijing has just passed the USA Meddling Act, which will add 100% tariffs to all U.S. goods imported into China for each country whose domestic affairs Washington interferes in. So if we just take the past 2 weeks as an example, where Washington has explicitly meddled into politics in Hong Kong, Turkey, UK, Syria, and Israel, and may even have been directly involved in unrest in Lebanon, Bolivia, and Chile. You're looking at 8 possible causes of U.S. meddling, which translates into an 800% hike in tariffs for U.S. imports into China. Of course, this is fake news, but you get the point. Imagine how Washington would react if China meddled in U.S. Geopolitics.
No, Nick, Mr. Ping, I'm happy if that happens.
Okay, Nick. Wonderful. Right. Nick says, this is in relation to Simon Cheng, I think. Simon Cheng also admitted to collecting money in Shenzhen on behalf of a Chinese national arrested in Hong Kong. None of his story adds up, but don't waste your time explaining to David Webb, as he only listens to me, myself, I. Martin says, the timing of Simon Cheng's story that he was tortured by authorities in Shenzhen is interesting, as it coincides exactly with the passing of the Human Rights and Democracy Act in the U.S. It's well known that the UK is the lapdog of the US. It appears that the UK has been assigned the task to rally the Europeans, who have been rather muted on Hong Kong, to step it up and take a position against China. On the back of Simon Cheng's story, the British Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab will visit various EU countries to push them to condemn China. As for Simon Cheng, his story is highly questionable and basically just another hit piece on China. The Hong Kong-based ex-British consulate staffer just resigned in November. The Brits paid him well, gave him a 2-year visit to live in the UK with his Taiwanese girlfriend. Someone can easily conclude that he indeed visited prostitutes, which is illegal in China. Back in August, he admitted to a local Chinese newspaper that he's visited a massage parlor in Shenzhen, many of which are a front for prostitution. In his TV interview, he did not want to answer the question about if he visited a prostitute. Wall Street Journal and the BBC, UK's public broadcaster, broke his story simultaneously. It's doubtful that Simon Cheng was able to arrange this by himself. Okay.
Martin. Well, since someone attacked me directly, can I respond? I mean, why would Simon Cheng include in his very detailed account of what happened to him over that period something that is basically... according to your listener, staining his reputation, the fact that he took some money on behalf of the family of someone who'd been arrested in Hong Kong, back to Hong Kong, to help him with his legal costs. I mean, that's largely irrelevant to Simon Cheng's story, but he included it in his account for completeness. And it makes him look like he was doing things other than representing the consulate in Hong Kong, in the mainland. But, of course, he's entitled in his spare time to do what he wants. I don't think there's anything illegal about helping someone's family to convey money to pay legal costs, but he included it anyway. That just kind of adds, that level of detail adds to the credibility of what he's saying.
Okay. E says, the sad thing about the Simon Cheng issue is that although his treatment was shocking, what happened to him is not surprising. It's more proof that the extradition bill was a bad idea. Alan said, I read Simon Cheng's account of his arrest. It seems very credible to me. The disorganization of Chinese police and secret service and bureaucratic cover-ups, all in the service of a stupid conspiracy theory that MI5 is behind the protesters. Whether he really visited as prostitute or just a masseur is irrelevant. He was forced to confess to using a prostitute to blacken his name. He said he went to China to meet an arrested protester's family to get money for bail. I doubt that was sanctioned by the UK government. And he was really dumb to take his work phone. He was no Jason Bourne, not even Johnny English. Otherwise, removing from the gene pool. The only way to do that is to sterilize or murder the parents and all their children, leading to the extension of the family. Done en masse, that is indeed genocide. That comes from Alan. Alan, thanks for that. Interesting point that actually, yes, that if he went to China to get money for bail, if the UK government was running it all, why didn't they pay it? Jay says, as most parents back their children and give their children full support, we could probably say that 90% of those in universities have full backing from their parents. And as we know that 90% of the Hong Kong are against the government, I think this does say quite a lot. So basically we can say the vandalism was caused by the 1 or 2% bad apples. And Thomas says, questions which must be asked. Newspapers are widely quoting the chief executive Carrie Lam. Quote, she said that she had agreed with police to resolve the Polly Yu situation peacefully. She also told the new commissioner of police to treat the injured and the under 18s humanely, unquote. Did she agree with the police or did the police agree with her? And who, by the way, gives orders to the police? Do we perhaps have an independent police or does the police get their orders from elsewhere? As for the treatment of demonstrators and rioters by the police, has Hong Kong now become a place where the leadership has to specify in what cases the citizens should be treated humanely? As for young people over 18 and the ones not injured, one has to worry as they might be treated inhumanely? That comes from Thomas. Thank you very much indeed for those comments. Just a couple.
With also the question of whether she's promised the police not to have an independent investigation of their behaviour over the last 6 months, along with all the other aspects of non-police issues in these protests. She allegedly has. And I don't see, why someone who is technically in indirect command of the police should be making those kinds of promises to them. Okay. It does make them sound like they're behaving rather too independently.
Nick, in an email, says, the target of the protesters' frustrations is misplaced. The real core target, the real root cause of all this, shouldn't really be the Hong Kong government or mainland banks or businesses or China, as in China, the state or country, or even the Chinese people. The real core target should be the Chinese Communist Party, the CCP. It's the CCP that's well past its sell-by date. It's the CCP that's oppressing, indoctrinating, and even attempting to mind control its own people. Oh, and not to mention ethnically cleansing the country's minorities and threatening Taiwan with war and upsetting the balance of the South China Sea. This is how a corrupt regime that is morally, ethically and politically bankrupt continues its grip on power. The real focus of the protesters, the oppressed minorities of China, the many dissidents around the world and ultimately Western politicians should be exposing the illegitimacy of the CCP. Just think how much better off China would be without the CCP. Time to go. Those thoughts come from Nick. Anna?
David, one thing I wanted to ask you was, what do you think the role of the business community is in this whole business? Because if we backtrack, there's the case of Joseph Lau, which you've talked about quite a lot. Where do we think the business community is in pushing through the extradition bill and their whole position around it, or businessmen being...
Well, they were opposed to it.
Opposed to it. Being, like Joseph Lau, convicted in Macau but hiding in Hong Kong. Hmm. Where do we sit with this now? You know,
well, he withdrew his opposition.
Yes, after Carrie changed the seven-year rule,
after the thresholds were moved and somehow maybe it was not going to be retrospective. And so anyway, he was somewhat reassured, I think, and stood down.
Yeah, but what about the other people who've done wrong and are hiding in Hong Kong?
Well, this goes back to the whole issue of the firewall between the two jurisdictions. You may find it, of concern that people can't be extradited to the mainland, but most people would not want that firewall to be removed, and that's why 2 million people marched saying, We don't like the idea of people in Hong Kong being extradited to face rough justice or non-justice in the mainland. And the business community was opposed to it for those reasons. And the government made some concessions earlier on before they withdrew the bill and suspended it to appease those concerns, including excluding various white-collar offences and raising the threshold for severity of the offences.
Yeah, but it wasn't enough. I mean, it wasn't even for the business community.
They were still opposed.
Yeah, almost universally, even those people that normally support China on most other issues, and part of it maybe because some of them felt they done things that they might get in trouble for. But I think most people just don't trust the system. It was very clear.
There were two parts to the bill as well. It wasn't just about the Fugitive Offenders Ordinance, no. But also the Mutual Legal Assistance, allows assets to be frozen in Hong Kong even during an investigation before charges have been laid. That's what the bill would have done.
That's right.
It would have allowed, for political reasons, somebody in China to be accused of corruption and then their assets in Hong Kong to be frozen. So it would have had an immediate effect of pushing assets offshore from Hong Kong into Singapore or Switzerland or other places, and the possibility of any of that being brought back has already had an impact on private banking here.
Okay, a couple more comments on Facebook. James says, has someone upstairs got something on Anna Fenton? Over the past few months, she's become even more reactionary than Mike Rouse.
Oh, my goodness.
What could that be, Anna?
Oh, I wonder.
Okay, and Neil says, with the subject line, torture in the PRC, talking to a protester yesterday, she said that Telegram says that many arrested protesters have been taken to China and tortured since being arrested in the last month. No proof, but it seems to be generally believed. Comes from Neil. While you're here, David Webb, last chance, do you think maybe with that huge number of arrests at the Polytechnic University, that's kind of broken the back of the protests? A lot of those people are going to be most active, the valiant, whatever you want to call them. Maybe it's nearly all over now.
No. Don't forget the 2 million odd people whose their calls have not been addressed, who would be willing to join peaceful protests in future. And also remember that anyone who has been arrested on suspicion, I mean, these are basically holding charges that they were being paraded through the magistrates' court. They've been accused of aiding and abetting or involvement in rioting, but they won't be able to make most of those charges stick. They won't be able to meet the beyond reasonable doubt test. And so they're all entitled to a presumption of innocence until proven guilty, and that's why they're all entitled pretty much to be bailed with some conditions. So they'll be back on the streets within 48 hours, basically, and unless Hong Kong is willing to pass not using the Emergency Regulations Ordinance, because that's unconstitutional, but pass proper legislation, changing those parameters and saying you can lock people up for 12 months before trial, even though they're presumed innocent, and that in itself would then go through a constitutional review in the courts. I don't see how you can actually keep them off the streets.
On the mask ban, it's my understanding that the High Court is going to decide on that today, isn't it?
I mean,
the government has asked for that.
Yes, they've asked the courts, and don't forget that there were very unusually, the Chief Justice ordered that there should be two judges in the Court of First Instance hearing this case, and they agreed on their judgment.
Right.
And the government's going to be asking them to suspend that judgment until appeals are exhausted.
Sure, but they're going to ask the court, and the court, and they will.
I doubt that the court will allow that, because they'll say, "Look, this is our ruling. There is no immediate harm caused in any case. This law wasn't really working. Have you seen rioters taking their masks off? Because of the fear of 1 year in jail for wearing a mask versus 10 years for being caught rioting. No, it obviously wasn't working anyway. So I don't think they're going to allow it to continue in effect.
Well, we'll find out.
But we'll see
today. Yeah, as you say. Yeah, David Webb, thanks for joining us, shareholder activist. Mark Simon, thank you very much indeed, columnist with Next Media. Mark Michelson, Chairman Asia CEO Forum, IMA Asia. That's quite a mouthful, Mark. Thank you very much indeed. Anyway, and Anna, many thanks to you. Glad we've got that thing on you upstairs.
Oh, yeah.
Makes it useful. Saves on pay as well. The weather, fine, dry, maximum temperature about 25 degrees, 21 degrees now. Relative humidity is at 65%.